and I'm delighted to welcome a friend of mine, of ours, for a long time friend, Brian McCabe, a retired New York City Police Department detective specialist and former chair of the American-Irish Historical Society, New York City Executive Council, and he is an Irish Echo columnist. And Brian, you are very welcome to the program.
Good morning, Adrian. Thanks very much. It's always a pleasure to speak to you.
We're in shock this morning, and before we speak of anything else, perhaps you might bring us to yesterday evening at an award ceremony in the at the Irish Echo in Rothie O'Grady's, when the word came through of yet another tragedy and the murder of a police officer. Bring us to there.
Thank you, Adrian. Thank you for your concern and your interest in this. It's important that we do discuss this. Speaking of awards first, I'd like to acknowledge yours, the Presidential Distinguished Service Award for the Irish President. Kudos on that. It's well-deserved and long overdue.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. So last night, the Irish Echo, acknowledging the contributions of the Irish historically to law enforcement, being the backbone, and actually setting a standard and a guide to others who came and joined us in that effort. They have an annual evening where they honor worthy police officers, women and men throughout the region, from the ranks of commissioner on down to rank and file police officers in the trenches every day. And last night was one such event. And I was asked to speak and to be one of the presenters of these awards. And that was the backdrop. It was a very full room at the Manhattan Club of Rosie O'Grady's. And we were very encouraged and very welcoming of the new mayor, Eric Adams, who took time from his busy schedule trying to get his hands around all that he's recently stepped into that role. Who came and he spoke very, very graciously about the Irish contribution and policing and his vision for a safer New York City. But I must say, I was particularly impressed with Keechan Sewell, our new police commissioner, a brilliant woman, also very, very cognizant of the Irish history and tradition, very respectful of that. And I had a very pleasant conversation with her. After I had done my presentations, we discussed, she was a detective, ultimately the chief of detectives in Nassau County, and I had been the commander of the Manhattan South Homicide Squad, worked with colleagues of hers, and so we had an opportunity for a nice chat. And then, you know, not to take up too much of her time, after we had that conversation, I was very, very impressed. She has a vision, and she has a mission, and I don't think she'll be dissuaded from that. And that was evident in only 5 minutes or so after we concluded our conversation. Gene White, who I believe you know, he's a DCPI.
Sure.
Yeah. He was doing the advance for the police commissioner, and he strode to our table with a sense of urgency, and he gave me the look, and I knew exactly that something was up, not knowing the details. He gave her a quick briefing, Sadabashi, and she then got up from the table with a determined, resolute look on her face, and they both quickly moved out of the room to the security detail, and then they went uptown to the 3-2 precinct where two police officers were shot and were gravely, gravely wounded. One, a very young fellow, Jason Rivera, he passed away. And his colleague is still clinging to life, but also still in a very grave situation. A third officer was shot at, and fortunately, Well, was not hit, and he returned fire, and then the assailant, he also was shot, and he passed away from his wound. The sense of it all was that this happens. This is part of our acceptance of that type of job, but the way the violence has been escalating in the city, from my perspective, as the result of some very, very ill-advised moves of treating a headache by cutting off the head. This is the logical consequence of 2 years of rabid anti-police, anti-law enforcement rhetoric, and the putting in place of some terrible laws that have hamstrung policing in the greatest city in the world.
Want to also point out that, you know, we're talking about a young police officer. We're talking about somebody who's, how long, he was only on the job a very short time, a few weeks, I believe.
That's right. That's right.
Pretty sad. That your evaluation of the new police commissioner and the mayor, for that matter, this is going to, well, first of all, there's no time to wait on this. This has right. to turn around. And hopefully as we go forward, now on the second police officer, he is clinging to life. And, you know, so a prayer wouldn't go astray in that sense. But we could not ignore, you know, this morning that whereas... New York and New York City is struggling to, you know, to come back and regain its prominence in the world. We're not off to a great start, this year. And the police department is under tremendous strain. Just overall impression, what do you feel can and should happen, and how quickly?
Well, it can't be quickly enough, to your point, Adrian. This is if we had a person who was wounded, and the first thing you need to do is to stop the bleeding before you consider how to deal with longer-term issues. Right now, the city is hemorrhaging. We see the number of police officers shot in this last week alone. One young fellow, also narcotics out in Staten Island the day before, who fortunately was shot in the leg, but he did so while shielding his colleagues in a very, very brave act of self-sacrifice. So the dedication of the officers is amazing to me, where despite all of the difficulties that they're confronting, they haven't stood down. They're still doing the dangerous work. But what they need, and I believe we're getting there, is an awakening of people in the city that despite good intentions, at the end of the day, there are people out there who thrive on disorder and the opportunity to do harm to fellow citizens. And everybody, I don't care what background, what your racial background or ethnic background is, everybody pretty much wants the same thing, and that is to have the ability to work, the ability to have your family safe. And that can't be done without a partnership of the policing and the people in the community. And I think that awakening has occurred. We have difficulties, of course, with district attorneys. People need to monitor that and vote their best interests, which is safety for all, and not ideological issues or to deal with the rights only of the accused, but consider the bigger picture and how it affects us, how it affects business, how it affects people going about their daily lives. That's, I think, is we're reaching a tipping point. It's been going on for too long now, and in particular since 2020. Eric Adams, I hope and I believe, take him at his word, he is committed to a safe city. He and Keyshawn Sewell both spoke earlier this week at a at the fifth anniversary mass at the cathedral. That was said by His Eminence Cardinal Dolan. They both were there, very, very respectful and reverential. They took the pulpit, and they both spoke, and they both spoke from the heart, acknowledged the sacrifices of the McDonald family and policing in general,
yeah.
and committed again to support of the profession. What we can do as civilians is to engage in that and to make sure that things can't be done without our approval, and that we hold their feet to the fire so that we do turn a corner. They are committed to it, but I think since the days of the Mayor Bloomberg, we've just gone so far. It's really tragic when you consider it. Notwithstanding civil liberties considerations, which you need to be part of the dialogue, we're the safest big city in the world. We were an example of how that could be done equitably, and there's been such a retreat from that that there is in the subways, in the streets, there is a great concern. People looking over their shoulder. People can't stand on a subway platform without fear of some deranged person coming up behind them and tossing them on the tracks. Everybody just has to say, stop, enough.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be supportive. And we can't just support by saying, yeah, great job. That was a heroic thing. We need to support from the system through, and one of the key pieces of this, Adrian, pardon me, is the district attorneys. If it's a revolving door all the time and there are no consequences for violent behavior, then sadly this won't be fixed anytime soon. So the mayor, the police commissioner I know, has already gone and made her feelings explicitly known to the new district attorney, who came in with an agenda that doesn't seem to have, from my perspective, the best interests and the safety of the city in at heart. And they've already stood up to that. So hopefully they'll keep that pressure on, and we'll see a realignment of our priorities when it comes to having a safe city for everybody.
You know, I think we can take from this, too, that perhaps it is time, you know, for us as citizens of New York to get over, you know, a fairly wicked period, lot of it with political overtones, and support the police, support our fire, support our emergency services, and stop whispering about it. Just let's take whatever route is necessary. But I think that some of this, because of some of the rhetoric over the last couple of years, has indeed spilled on to, you know, those, like you aptly pointed out there, great job, fellas, and all the rest. But okay, let's put some backing into that and make sure that we, at the end of the day, we're the ones who need the protection. We're the ones who need, you know, the protection of, in particular, the police department. You know, Brian, when this, and I'm not sorry about it. As a matter of fact, this is opportune that we address this this morning, but before, when we scheduled you to come on, it was, the topic was, and still is, that this being the 125th anniversary of the founding of the American Irish Historical Society, we have to look at what's happening in the Irish community. First of all, we have the Ireland's Great Hunger Museum at Quinnipiac University unceremoniously just closed the door one day and said, that's it, not so, we're not letting that go. And Tarla McConnell, Indeed, a bit of a terrier, if you know what I mean. He has undertaken and is doing one hell of a job. And you know, I as a committee member, we need to get that open a little closer to home. The American Irish Historical Society, for reasons best known to themselves, as an elitist organization, they decided, okay, let's sell this joint and we will move all of the history for the last 125 years of the Irish in New York. Let's just, sell the building and get on with it. Nobody will care. Well, we do care. And you care because you're the chairman of, the American Irish Historical Society. And maybe they picked the wrong guy to mess with. Tell us about it.
Well, I must say, Tarlac has been doing a phenomenal job, and I've consulted with them. We have a number of mutual concerns in the campaign to save or to reform and renew the American Irish Historical Society. One of the issues we have in common is the location, the buildings themselves, and stopping operations is one thing. The other is we're very concerned about the integrity of the collection. There's great artwork up at the Great Hunger Museum that Tarlac
Connecticut University in Hamden, right. Connecticut. Yeah,
right. He's very concerned about that, and I agree. I think there was a great miscalculation, and I've always took very, very seriously my idea that I don't want to personalize this. I never did. Myself and Jim Normeil, the former President General, and Sophie Colgan, who's been a phenomenal colleague in dealing with these issues, we tried internal reform at the Society. And when I became aware of certain issues that simply needed to be addressed, a reckoning was in order, and that's when the move began, not to address those issues that we raised, but to remove myself and Jim from our leadership positions. Historically, anytime anybody in a leadership position on that board raised those uncomfortable questions about governance, about finance, about the integrity of the collection, about the sense of a proprietary ownership of the building in the society as opposed to being the stewards for the Irish people of essential artwork and document the history of our people, particularly in this country. 125 years. It's the oldest and longest serving institution of its kind dedicated to the acknowledging the efforts of the Irish in America and all that we've done in forging an identity in this country and in making this country having no small part in the advancements that were made in this country in many, many fields. So that in and of itself is important. Now, the building, of course, is an obvious, incredibly valuable piece of real estate, but to the likes of myself, and I know you are sympathetic to this, it stands for much more than that. That building, it represents the success of the Irish in this country. A building on Fifth Avenue, Museum Mile, across from the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where it wasn't all that long ago. Indeed, it would have been within the lifetime of the society before they were able to secure that building in 1939. Well, the only Irish that would have been in or near that building would have been people who would be maintaining it or scrubbing the marble steps outside. It's really a symbol of all that we've accomplished, and it also could stand as a symbol for those other groups that came behind us and what can be achieved in this country. So there's a great more at stake with that building than merely its real estate value. And then, of course, those questions still need to be answered. Finance, the integrity of the collection, and the governance of the board, which simply, I think everybody realizes at this point, it needs to be totally reformed, transparent, and representative of our community with all we have to offer. Revenue streams dried up over the years because the good-hearted philanthropical impulse in our community, they recognized they didn't want to continue supporting the lifestyle or the elite ownership of that building since it was no longer dedicated to its stated mission. So when we were approached about you're either going to resign or we will move the board, there were a number of properties on the board. the ruling cabal there had been used to leadership when confronted with that, taking the path of least resistance and just walking away. Well, we realized that it was now or never. We need to do what's right for our community. And we told them that there's a third way, and that is we will fight for the integrity of this organization. And that's what we did. And then so that initiated I personally was concerned about why was this move made at the time that it was. I had personally just delivered the most successful dinner that they had in years with the Terrence O'Sullivan as honoree. And I just put my just thinking about it, I'm like, there's something here. And so what I did was what I was able to access the public filings. Anybody can, but with an understanding from my service within the organization, I was able to see that there were gross improprieties reported in those filings. And with that, and with a lot of other support from people who realized that finally something like a reckoning was going to happen, who came out with information, we had a discussion with the Attorney General's office, who are responsible for their charities bureaus, responsible for institutions like the AIHS. And so it's been in their capable, diligent, and professional hands. Since then, we anticipate some word at some point relatively soon. The Attorney General, Letitia James herself, came out with a public statement last St. Patrick's Day, committing to a full review. So we're confident that the merits will see ultimately a new day in the AIHS, where we could start the next 125 years in a transparent, open, and welcoming symbol for the Irish throughout the world in that building on Fifth Avenue. I think it's fair to say that it's a year ago that they tried to sell the building in a gross miscalculation. We were able and we were able to stop that sale. We mobilized 40,000 people, as well as many community leaders and advocates who certainly have brought the light of day. And I think that's it, Adrian, and thank you as well for your interest in this, because it's that light of day. You know, if they're allowed to operate in the dark without any questions, and then it'll just be status quo continuing. But the more people know, the more people say, hey, wait a second, we have a stake in this as well. This represents our struggle, our accomplishments in this country. It's not to be owned by one small group to the exclusion of others in our community.
And perhaps my guest friend's Brian McCabe, who a retired New York City Police Department detective specialist, and indeed the last and former chair of the American Irish Historical Society here in New York City. I think, Brian, one of the you know, some of the realities of life. And for some reason, there are those who feel that our community, an Irish community, one to the fore in many areas of success and culture and art and whatever, you know, that when blatant attempts, and this being one, if not top of the list, when blatant attempts are being made to pull something over, perhaps, you know, maybe, you know, the Irish are doing all right, let's not, you know, something like this, we can take care of this ourselves. When you talk about 40,000 signatories who came on board and says, including the Irish government, by the way, who have been supportive of the American Irish Historic Society for decades.
Right.
When everybody gets together, keeping quiet, waiting to see what happened, is the greatest downfall of all time. So, yes, whether that's the, you know, the Irish Hunger Memorial at Quinnipiac University, whether that is, you know, the American Irish Historic Society, we're losing. And we need to, again, rally and let people know that we're interested. Otherwise, the interpretation might be, well, you know, that's okay. Maybe this will go away if we write it out. We're not in a position to write it out. And while I, you know, just to touch on, you know, our losing ground in some areas, we've mentioned too, the Tenement Museum in downtown Manhattan, not extremely well known or publicized, but just give us, you know, a brief description of yet another whack at the Irish.
Yeah, that's a curious thing, and in the interest of inclusion, and I get that, there was the first tenant of that tenement, and the historically, when the museum was founded, it was about the immigration into the city, into the urban area, starting with an Irish fella who lived in the building, and then going through various other ethnic groups that came. And each one had their own focus on that group. And so while they wanted to include the African-American experience, which I understand and respect, what they did was they decided to have some type of hybrid by having the Irish aspect of it and including an African-American experience from the general area. I think
not from
that,
the building,
from outside the building. But I think that it's certainly laudable to include the African American experience. It's essential to our knowledge of ourselves in the city, but not at the expense of another very valid. Each should have their own, and trying to marginalize the Irish experience as the first, and you might have hit on it. It's the first, and now we're cycling through, and everybody's like, oh, they're okay. But it's not. And you see that, and you see kind of even the great job that you had been involved in years ago with the Hunger Monument down in Battery Park City, and how well-deserved essential workers the recent governor wanted there to encroach on that. Because, like, hey, it's the Irish thing. Put another monument there on that ground. It does seem like when it comes time to try to make room for others, rather than include everybody in the big tent, it's kind of like elbowing our crowd outside a bit.
Then again, we'll
dig our heels in, and it's not that easy to do.
Yeah, but again, if we don't create a rumpus a lot of these things can be, you know, smothered. Next thing you know, we have a problem. The deed is done, and now we have to go back. So I thank you for, for all you do. And I know that definitely on a great number of issues that your columns in the Irish Echo are indeed very interesting and to the point. Brian McCabe, thank you. And thank you for joining us this morning and filling us in on that. Okay.
Friends, thank you, Adrian. You're very gracious. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks. We, friends,